Hi there, and welcome to the Women in What We Do podcast. I'm Mary Brucker, your host, and I am so excited to share our next guest. So I'm so excited to introduce our next guest. To me, I think that she is a robot. I know that other people think she's superhuman, but I think she has to be a robot. She is a mother, a wife, a bank executive, a soon-to-be law student graduate, an entrepreneur, an advocate, and so much more. Please welcome to the show, Ms. Kathy Tucker.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be here with one of my favorite people in the world.
Oh, I love it when people say that. Are you saying that just because I'm interviewing you right now?
No, I don't say that often.
I know. So, Kathy, I have been wanting to get you on the show for a long time. For those of you listening, Kathy is one of the reasons why I have this podcast. She is also the president of the Board of Women of Toledo, which we serve together. And she's kind of encouraged me throughout to just be heard. So I want the people out there to listen to your story, Kathy, which is quite impressive at your beautiful young age. Where did all this ambition start?
So it probably started from childhood. My mother is, for a long time, she was the director of nursing at in a small town. Fostoria, Ohio is where I'm from. Now, prior to us landing in Fostoria, she served in the Army.
Oh my gosh.
And she was just a bright woman. She went to Bowling Green State University on a college scholarship. She graduated from Woodward High School, so she, you know, really made her own way. And when we landed in Fostoria, when I was about first grade, you know, her and my father divorced. She had three children at the time and was working as the director of nursing in Fostoria. And I really wanted to, I think my leadership started there because I really wanted to help her. I was six when she divorced, and my siblings were four and three.
Wow.
So I just took on the role of supporting my mother.
At 6 years old.
Yes. And she was encouraging of that. My mom was a woman who I think was a trailblazer. She really gave me independence, and it was my choice to help her. So over time, watching her and trying to really just emulate her footsteps, she was pretty tough on me in the most loving way. But you know, my love for books came from her making me read. I remember thinking like, Mom, I don't want to read this. When I was in the second grade, I was reading on an eighth grade level. And it was because she made me read all the time. So keep going and getting through. I played sports in high school. I was always like team captain, etc. But when I got out on my own, things changed for me a little bit. I didn't know what I wanted to do. My mom did have high expectations. I went to college. Then I ended up getting married and dropped out of college. And
how many years were you in college before you dropped out?
About 2.5 years.
Okay.
I didn't know what I wanted to do. My family, a lot of them do have careers in the medical field, and I didn't want that. So I actually dropped out and didn't tell my mom. I pretended I was in nursing school for like a year after that. So then I went into this phase in my life where I wanted to try something new. So I started working in banking.
And how old were you at this time?
24.
Okay. Were you married now?
I was.
Okay.
But I was worried in my previous marriage.
Okay.
And I had two small children. And I was working, and I was pretty good at banking. I had gotten promoted rather quickly to a manager position. And then I had gotten tapped on the shoulder a few years in to become for almost like a senior level role. Well, when they went through my resume, and this was years ago, I didn't have a college degree, and they disqualified me for the role.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. And
after years of being in the bank.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I never want that to happen to me again. So I went back to school online and got my bachelor's degree. And I tried to go and get my master's, but I was just like, school honestly was not something that I ever felt that I was good at. I was not good at standardized testing. I always scored low on my ACT and SAT. So, which I'm saying this now, and I know you know why, because there's a funny story there. So I always, and during that phase in my life, I was at a difficult point. I was in my first marriage that was just not successful and really was not healthy. And so I made a decision when my children were young, 3 and 4, to divorce. And so I became, you know, essentially a single mom myself. And it was something that I wanted to avoid. It, and my entire life, I saw what my mom went through and I said, I will never parent alone.
Right.
And I found myself there, which was one of the greatest blessings because I found my husband, Angel Tucker. At the time, I was working in Oregon at a bank, and he was a police officer there. And this was so funny. We saw each other in a protein shake shop, and he introduced himself. And I just looked at him for a second. He said, I know what you're thinking. And I said, what am I thinking? He says, you didn't know there was a black cop in Oregon, did you? I go, that's exactly what I was thinking.
And a very handsome one, I might add.
He was. I mean.
He is. Not what.
Yes, no. At the time he was. He's even more handsome now. Yeah. And it's funny because I remember thinking, I'm like, I am never going to get married again. I'm just going to do my own thing. And then I had met him very shortly after my divorce, like maybe 6-7 months. And I was like, I'm ready to get married again. When I met him, I was like, it was like love at first sight. So my life had gotten a lot better after I met Angel. My confidence was really, really low. I was grappling with feelings of like worthlessness. I, you know, disappointed.
During what time? During the divorce?
Yeah, during and post-divorce.
It's funny, Kathy, I would never imagine that from you. You hold yourself so confidently now, but we go through that, right? Like internally, we can feel one way, and externally, it looks totally different.
Yeah.
So talk about that. Let's talk about feeling, like, why did you feel that way?
You know, I think I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder for a few reasons. Racial identity is one of them. So my mother is black and my father is Lebanese, but my father wasn't around. So I felt for some period, when I grew up in Fostoria, there was a lot of like mixed race people.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to Toledo, I didn't see as much of that. And Toledo was a big city to me. Fostoria is a rural town. So I'm like a small town gal. Being in Toledo is like New York or Chicago for me. And I struggled being out on my own to kind of like find where I fit in. My first marriage, I got married young, and it was two young people who I think got into a relationship too fast.
Right.
And it wasn't healthy. And when during that marriage, I developed even more feelings of just not good enough, you know, that worthlessness and some things in my life that I've gone through that when I'm ready to share, I will.
Sure.
That, you know, had brought, you know, some shame. And I didn't have the, I'm a private person. So I never did therapy. I didn't even tell some things to my closest family members because I always felt like my story is my story.
Right.
And I needed to sort of navigate through that. And just a lot of things happening in my career. I felt insecure for a long time about my education. I felt like I had been successful, but there's so much pressure,
right,
to be like college educated. And as a woman who's trying to move up in leadership and typically being in rooms where you're the only woman, sometimes you can be made to feel that you're maybe not as qualified and maybe not as smart. And we're only human. And so a lot of those feelings I internalized for a very long time. I had a big lack of confidence. I could kind of fake it at work, and I was young.
Right. But how many people go through that? I mean, think about young women today. Right now, our confidence is everywhere because our faces are everywhere, social media. Like, you can't have a personal story almost anymore. Like, yeah. Our whole lives are out there. So how did you navigate out of that zone? Because I don't feel like you're still living in that place.
Yeah, so it's my husband, Angel. And I always talk to people, and I tell them, the people that are in your lives, especially your spouse or your significant other, is going to make or break you.
Right.
Right? I know what breaking felt like. And from the moment I met my husband, he saw in me something I didn't see in myself. And he, every single day, he still does it to this day. Every single day, he told me I was beautiful and you're smart. He would hype me up like, you are the smartest person in the room. And he nurtured me. And my husband, we have shared trauma. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a recognition when you, between us, and he's very open about his PTSD. He has a really powerful story. But it's like he knew exactly what I needed. And he really sort of built me up. He's like my hype man. And he was very connected in the community because of the work he did. He's a national consultant. A lot of people don't know that he's a co-author on a book. He's just a very successful and servant leadership type of man. And so he was making connections for me. I, for a long time, was incredibly antisocial because I didn't have confidence. I just said that to him yesterday. I go, I think I'm like more social now. I think before I wasn't social because I wasn't confident.
Yeah.
But I would have referred to myself as an introvert that doesn't like people, but but that's not true.
I don't think that's true.
Now I feel more extroverted and I do like people.
You know, I hear all the time, and I see quotes and stuff that you just have to love yourself and you just have to, you know, love yourself first. But sometimes that's hard. Sometimes you need somebody else to help you love yourself. And I'm so grateful that Angel was that and continues to be that person for you. I mean, we all need that. So tell me how your mom fits into this story, because I'm still intrigued by her push to make you be this amazing woman.
Yeah, and I want to go back to something you said too, because I actually believe the opposite. I think love with self cannot happen in a vacuum. For me, it doesn't. It is the people you are around. And I say to people all of the time, and young women, look at the people around you. And what are they doing? Are they feeding you? Are they pouring into you? Are they encouraging you to do things that seem impossible? Or are they holding you back? Because it's like osmosis.
Right. That's exactly right.
And so so my mom, she was always someone who taught me to be strong, but be honest and walk in my purpose. She is very straightforward and honest. And as I was getting older, you know, she was the person who I always went to. Her and I are best friends. And I confided in her in a lot of my struggles. And she always walked me through. Like, if I go into a room and this is what's happening, she would always kind of help script me so that I could feel a little bit more, you know, powerful. She always spoke about, like, just show up and be powerful. You know, you're a powerful woman. You come from a powerful line
right.
of women, which I do. And so
speak the truth. I mean, like, that is the encouragement. That's what we have to do.
Yeah.
And talking about encouraging you to be better than, or continuing to be strong, or continuing to educate, I kind of want to pivot into what you're doing now. So you went on to be a bank executive. You're mm-hmm. a chief experience officer.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. A chief experience officer at a bank. You got your degree originally, correct? Mm-hmm. So you went back and got your degree.
I did.
And then from the student who didn't do well or didn't think they could take tests is now doing what?
Yes. So on December 14th, I graduate from the University of Toledo College of Law. And going back to my husband, so the reason I went on this pathway, so I started in banking. I transitioned over to a nonprofit organization. I was their CEO for about 5 years, and we helped marginalized communities, predominantly, you know, single moms, our minority communities become first-time homeowners. It was wonderful, but I learned a lot about fair housing, and I was shocked, like very shocked, by all the discrimination that was happening. I felt like every interaction I was involved in had some component of discrimination. So I had had my third child, and I literally had had an emergency C-section, and it was a rough one. But this woman I had been working with for 4 years had improved her credit score to over 800, had saved up over $30,000. She'd been on public housing her entire life.
Incredible.
And we worked together. This woman was sharp. She was getting ready to go in for her mortgage, and she wanted me to come with her. This was about 3 weeks after my C-section. So I grabbed my newborn baby, and I went to the credit union with her, or I mean the bank with her. And the interaction, she was being openly discriminated against. And in fact,
In front of you, the
mortgage loan officer said, I don't know what we can qualify you for from a mortgage because you've been paying $25 for your rent your entire life. How do we know you can pay a mortgage on time? Those were her exact words. I became infuriated. And I went to the CEO and I'm saying this and I'm saying that. And I went home and I was so upset. I cried. And I went to my husband and I just said it like out of anger. And I looked at my husband and I said, you know what? How would you feel if I said I wanted to go to law school? Right? I threw it out there. And look, here I am, like freshly out of a C-section with the baby.
Right.
You're laughing now because you're like, this is the Kathy I know.
This is the robot I introduced.
Yes. And you can thank Angel. Angel started that with this conversation. I thought he was going to be like, you are crazy. He looked at me and he said, you know what? You will make a hell of a lawyer. Uh-huh. And I was like, really? He says, go do it. And so this is funny, right? I told you about my struggles. I was terrified to take the LSAT. I self-studied for 9 months. I was scoring very low. Then I remember I was reading, I was taking all these practice tests and I kept scoring low. And I remember having a complete breakdown at like 3 a.m, kicking my books around the living room and crying because I wanted it so bad, but I was just like, I'm not smart enough. So I kept studying and then I took it. And then I did well on it, which was shocking to me. And then that's how my law school journey began. And I went to law school because I have seen systems. And a lot of our systems are broken and a lot of our systems are unjust. And I remember wanting to walk into that bank's office and be able to file a court pleading.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
And I'm like, I can't do that. And so for me, the lesson in that is never label yourself as, don't label yourself as to what you can't do. Think about possibilities. That changed, that was a huge mind shift for me to say, I am capable.
Right.
I can do this. And something that's very, very difficult. And so you put your mind to it, possibilities are endless. And what I've done and what I've learned has been incredible. And along my journey in my career, you know, you do the work, keep your head down, continue to give back. I've always done everything to try and help. I've been like that since I was a child. My banking career came from, you know, I was hired in a high role at a national financial institution. And the woman who hired me, she was an immigrant from Kenya, just this phenomenal woman. And she saw something. I don't believe I had the qualifications, but she saw something special in me. She gave me an opportunity that really propelled my career, which is why I think I've ended up in this role. I learned a lot.
And that is something that I see you in all the time. I know you're a mother, a wife, a banker, but what I see you as, Kathy, is this true advocate of people. And that comes from someplace different. Mm-hmm. I've seen you stand up to some of the scariest people to me because you feel so strong in your advocacy. Where does that come from? The six-year-old daughter, the insecure woman, the person who, you know, like, think of all these steps that you've gone through. How do you become an advocate?
So being the oldest of four, I hated bullies. I couldn't stand. I remember my first day of high school. There was this kid who got picked on. It was my first day. I was a freshman, and a bunch of seniors walked up to him. He was carrying all of his books, and they came and just hit the books out of his hands. And I went up to them, and I scolded them and I helped him and I sat with him at lunch every day after that. I hate bullies. Mm-hmm. And from even, I think, but what I took more away from that is I'm like, who is this young man's voice? Why are all of these people walking around allowing this to happen? There's this saying that I learned recently, and it is, what you don't address, you accept. And I think silence is way worse than the act in itself. So for me, I've seen it happen to my mother. I've seen it happen to people that I love. And I refuse, I cannot help myself. If I see something and it needs to be addressed, you better believe, and I don't care who it is, I'm going to be someone else's voice who doesn't feel that they can really stick up for themselves.
I know you had struggles with school and stuff like that before, but what was your favorite part about being in law school? It certainly wasn't all the reading of the books, because I've seen pictures.
Yeah, no, that wasn't great. I will tell you, so the University of Toledo College of Law has a program, and it's the, our organization is a non-governmental organization that can go to Guantanamo Bay to observe the 9/11 trials. And yes, they're still going on. And one of the areas of law that I'm interested in is human rights. And I love international law. So even before I started law school and I saw that this happened, I'm like, I have to do that. And in fact, I had a baby when I was in law school and I was 7 months pregnant. When they did a call out, I asked my husband to go. He's like, you are not going to Guantanamo Bay 8 months pregnant. But that was a life-changing experience for me, because I got to go to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and I actually got to observe the 9/11 pre-trial hearings of the alleged mastermind and essential conductor of the 9/11 attacks, and got to see all of them in the courtroom. There are five. There's a Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and then his four co-conspirators. It was life-changing because, I always thought that I believed in the death penalty. And even with a crime that is so egregious, when you have to look someone in the eye and know that the government is wants to put them to death, it was like a whole different experience. I was like, maybe I don't know where I feel on like issues like this. But it caused me to existentially question, you know, what I want to do with my life. It was an experience. And the really awesome part about it, too, is first of all, Cuba's beautiful. It was a great experience to learn how the military commission does the trials and pre-trials. But I got to meet so many amazing people. People are always looking at me and they're like, oh, you're doing so much stuff. You're literally there with people who are doing as much stuff as me and more. And I got to make so many connections that have turned into other connections. I actually wrote a paper, a First Amendment paper, earlier this summer. And I kept in contact with the General Brigadier Jackie Thompson, who's head over all of the defense. And I sent my paper to him. And he asked if he could give it to one of the detainees' defense teams.
Incredible.
And it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And the last thing I'll say on this is the biggest thing I learned is that the issues that are big issues like that are very complicated and very nuanced. I felt so many emotions at one time seeing, you know, this capital murder charge and seeing these individuals that could potentially be put to death. But then I was right next to 15 victim family members.
Right.
And hearing them cry, hearing the pain, and just, it was very intense. But it taught me that we can't think in a binary type of way. It's not this or that. There are so many other nuances, and I feel like it helped me think and feel about really critical issues in a much more critical way.
Right.
It was life-changing for me.
And before we end this podcast, I have to talk about another one of my favorite things. You're an entrepreneur also, and you will be opening a winery.
Yes.
Like, And the robot speaks again. A banking executive, a lawyer, and a wine maker entrepreneur. Tell me about that journey.
My husband has been making wine for almost 15 years. I make the joke that I said, you had me at wine. Right. It's like, you make wine too? You're so perfect. But his wine is excellent. And with him taking, you know, an early retirement out of law enforcement, he was making wine. And then I make the joke of I was in law school, and law school is very hard. So I was like drinking more than I probably would have. And so
you mean sampling product for,
I call myself quality control.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we actually, you had Soon Young.
Yes.
On your podcast. And we were in a, I was meeting with her, and we gave her a bottle of wine as just a gift, because we always just gave it away. But a lot of people had been asking us to if they could buy it a lot. But Soon Young said to me, man, I love this wine. I would love to be able to bring this to Korea. And I was like, wow, really? That meant a lot to me that someone who's part of the United Nations would be interested in talking about our product in a different country. So I went home after that and I told my husband, I said, we should start a business. And it's been a journey. We've been on this journey for about a year and a half. There's a lot of legal obstacles, but we're very close. We achieved our federal permits. We're almost done with the state permits. And we've got a building downtown.
I know.
And we'll be able to hopefully grand open sometime, you know, spring of next year. But for us, it's not about the wine. What we found is that, yeah, the wine is good, but like all of these magical things happen when we get people in a room to drink our wine, the connections people make and the impact that wine could have on someone. And I'll tell you, you listed all of the things that I do. And now that people know that we're starting a wine company, like none of that stuff matters anymore. <I know. laughs> There is nothing cooler than starting a winery. They're like, yeah, she's graduating law school. Yeah, she's an executive. But forget all of that.
So, Kathy, your story continues to amaze me and inspire me. But I still continue to view this six-year-old little girl. And there's a lot of six-year-old little girls out there who are trying to figure out who I can be. And I know that that seems young, but we start processing this stuff obviously at a young age. What would you tell these little girls that are just starting to grow up in this crazy world right now, who and what they can be?
I would tell them to think about even like their favorite characters and see what they do and know that you can do the same. And I say that because one of the things that kept me focused as a child, ironically, is watching the Disney movies and seeing the princesses, seeing the, like Pocahontas was a big one to me. And I remember thinking, man, she could really change the way that her little system works. And I wanted to be like her. I had a mother in my life who I wanted to be like. And so for the little girls who are just trying to find their way, and there are a lot of six-year-old girls in that age range that go through a lot at that age. And I would just encourage them to dream. I remember I wanted to be a mermaid. I know that sounds crazy, but it's because I wanted to be free. And I look back, and that's what I remember about my childhood, is wanting to be that woman who is free someday. And I would just encourage them to see anything they want to be and understand that they can absolutely do that.
I love it. Well, I think you are a mermaid. I mean, you're not only free to do, obviously, whatever you put your mind to, but certainly to encourage all the rest of us to keep pushing forward, that sometimes we have to find love ourselves, but surround ourselves with people who will lift us up. You do that to me. We do that to each other. And I'm just grateful to have you in our community. And I'm so excited to get the wine. I meant to say, I'm so excited to see what the rest of the future is like for you.
Yeah. And thank you, Mary. You've been a really big inspiration to me and to our organization at Women of Toledo. And what you're doing with the podcast is truly uplifting and inspirational. So thank you for everything you do. Hopefully your listeners know all of the stuff that you do. You're pretty phenomenal.
I like to tell, you know, the story, right? We say this is women and this is what we do. So I'm really proud that we have this platform to share these amazing stories. And I hope more people come forward to share them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sometimes you're just destined for greatness, and other times you have to work really hard at it. Well, Kathy Tucker is an example of both. She shows us that you don't have to be great to eventually be great. And as I get older, I learn for sure exactly what she says. You have to surround yourself with people who love and lift you up. It was such an honor to have her here today, and I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. To my amazing producer, Chris Piper, and again, to Kathy Tucker for sharing so much of her beautiful story. If you'd like to hear more stories on Women in What We Do podcast, please tune in to wgte.org/whatwedo or wherever you listen to your podcast. And remember, speak up. We do.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.